Sure enjoyed a wonderful time of fellowship and a great meal, the noon meal. And I know that it's especially difficult on Saturday afternoon to sit through a preaching service. One of my members, older members, reminded me, he said, if more than three people go to sleep in the congregation, you need to wake the preacher up. So I'll try to stay awake and pray the Lord would bless us for a few minutes. Acts chapter 16. I love the book of Acts. It is an exciting book, and it's an exciting time for the Lord's church. It's exciting to see how that the Lord was active in blessing churches to be started, to see His Spirit move in a mighty way, and it was just an exciting time for the Lord's people. I think back about what it must have been like back in the 20s and 30s and 40s when Elder Gerald Hand and many others in this area were blessed to travel through West Texas and New Mexico and other areas and see churches start up and begin to prosper and flourish. And I can relate that much to the book of Acts. We'll go down, and it starts in verse 4. I actually heard one time someone say that the Lord's churches ought to be in the country. And I've been to some of the country churches, and I love to go to the country churches. I love to go to the city churches as well. I've been to some churches that didn't have a sign, and you had to really hunt for it before you could find the church. But I love the Lord's churches that are in the country. But here it says that the Lord went through the cities. It says, and as they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees to keep that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. And so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. It's a blessing that the Lord was adding to the churches. They increased in number daily. And it comes on down and tells us that the Spirit had forbidden them to go in verse 6, and preach the word in Asia. Now, if we believed and embraced a free will doctrine, I don't know how we'd be able to relate this verse to the Spirit forbidding you to go and preach the word in a certain area. But clearly, that's what it says right here. And again, in verse 7, it says, and after they were come to Masaya, they essayed them to go into Bethania, but the Spirit suffered them not. And it says that in verse 9, and a vision appeared to Paul in the night, and there stood a man of Macedonia and prayed him, saying, come over into Macedonia and help us. Come over into Macedonia and help us. That verse is underlined in my Bible. And I underlined it here about 23 years ago. And it was a very important verse to me. A little less than 30 years ago, my parents moved to Washington, D.C., and my parents were only going to be there for 5 years. And so I was going to travel up there and visit my mom and my sister, and I went to Washington, and Brother Afton Richards said, I want you to look up a good friend of mine. I've stayed in the home of Sister Opal, and I've stayed in the home of Elder and Sister Compton. They live in Washington, D.C., and I'd like for you to look them up, and I'd like for you to attend church with them at Columbia. And so when we went up there, I had the phone number that Brother Afton had arranged, and we made the connection and went over and visited with them, went to church, and had a wonderful time. Several years later, I went back and I called Elder Compton. I said, are you going to be at Columbia tomorrow? We're planning to come to church over there. I'm back in the area and looking forward to coming. And he said, well, I'm going to be at a church up north in Bel Air, Maryland. I was not quite ordained at the time. And he knew that I was exercising. And he said, would you fill in for me at Columbia, at his home church? And I said, I'll be glad to. I'll miss getting to see you, but I'll be glad to be there at Columbia. He called me back in a couple of minutes, and he said, on second thought, he said, the church at Bel Air, they've been without a pastor for a year, and I wasn't ordained. He said, would you mind going up there, and would you mind filling the appointment at the church in Bel Air? And I said, sure. He gave me directions, and we went to the church in Bel Air. Had a wonderful time. The Lord blessed us. And then a few months later, about 4 or 5 months later, 6 months later, after I had been ordained, I went back up to see my mom, and once again I called Elder Compton and I said, you going to be at Columbia? And he said, well, no, I'm scheduled to be at Bel Air tomorrow. And he said, would you go to Bel Air again? Folks would like for you to come up there, and would you go up again? And I said, sure. So I went to Bel Air and felt like the Lord richly blessed. And then they were scheduling and planning an annual meeting, and they asked me to come back. And so I went back, and I really thought that I would live my life here and be buried in the Gaines County Cemetery. That's where most of my family's buried, near Seagraves in Seminole, Texas, and I may still be buried there. But I never gave it much thought of ever living anywhere else. Some folks say, well, how in the world did you end up in Maryland, in Yankee country? By the way, we're 20 miles south of the Mason-Dixon line. I preached a meeting in South Georgia. It's a difference in Georgia and South Georgia. And the pastor told me, he said, it would be for your good if you'd tell folks that you're originally from Texas. After preaching a meeting, they invited me to come back and visit again, and they were in search for a pastor. And Elder Sonny Piles preached there every year for about 30 years, and then the following week he was at a church in this area, and he told me, he said, your name came up in search for a pastor. Elder Harder was there, and he was preaching in this area, and he told me, he said, they asked me if I thought that you would come to this area. And he says, I told them, no way. And they said, well, now, Elder Harder, we're not asking him, but if we did, do you think he would come? Elder Harder said, well, that's about like asking somebody to marry you. I'm not asking you to marry me, but if I did, would you marry me? He said, if you want him to come, ask him. So after going several times, feeling confused and struggling with my family here, my grandparents, my church family was pastoring the church at Crosbyton, and the Lord was blessing us there, and we were rejoicing in the Lord. After coming back from a preaching trip up there, and I felt like that the Lord had richly blessed us abundantly, I was in the home of my grandparents in the bedroom, and I was reading this verse. And it says, Paul was impressed of the Lord, come over into Macedonia and help us. That verse jumped off the page. It looked like to me that it was almost filled with a yellow highlighter. Less than 5 minutes after reading this verse, the telephone rang. It was an older gentleman of the church in Bel Air. He's now gone to be with the Lord, Brother Von Petty. He said, you probably don't remember me. He said, I'm not a deacon or anything like that. But he said, I just felt of the Lord to call you and tell you that we needed for you to come over and help us. Now, what would you do? The Lord doesn't always speak to me like that. He doesn't. I went back and visited, and we had supper in one of the homes of one of the young couples. He's now a deacon in our church, wasn't then. And they had a cake, and Brother Mike Rogers was there with me at this time, and they had a cake, and on the cake it said, they had no idea I'd read this verse. It simply said, come over and help us. What would you do? I still didn't give them an answer. They said, we're going to pray about it for 30 days, and we wanted you to know that we're praying about it. And they called me and they said, it was unanimous to call you as pastor. Now, it hadn't always been unanimous since then. But it was right then. And I still couldn't give them an answer. I said, well, if you prayed about it for 30 days now, I'm going to ask you to pray another 30 days. And they kept calling and wanting an answer. And I was reluctant to give an answer. Because I don't know about you, but if you ever made a decision and then you thought maybe the Lord was leading and you made a decision and then you realized that it wasn't of the Lord. And I didn't want to get the U-Haul truck loaded up and make the trip up there and get there and realize that it wasn't of the Lord. I wanted to know if it was truly what the Lord would have us to do. I've had a lot of doubts about a lot of things in life. But I don't doubt how we're saved. It's just as clear to me as it can be that it's by His sovereign and free grace. Now, I don't know that I'll live in that area for the rest of my life, but I do believe at that time that the Lord impressed the folks there and myself to fulfill that calling that he made. And I'll tell you, I felt it so strongly that through the years, when some of those times came that maybe I wouldn't have been called back unanimously, when there were some challenges that we had, when there were some difficulties that we had, when there were some folks that had some challenges with, when there were some times that I was almost ready to pitch in the towel, that I looked back upon this experience and I remembered how that the Lord had impressed and led at that time. And it gave me strength to go on. I remember one time getting so discouraged that I took the church directory and I thought to myself, is there still anybody else that you have in this church that you want me to minister to? And I began to thumb through the directory and I saw that there was a whole lot of folks. But I'd been focusing on the ones that didn't want me to minister to them rather than the ones that did. I'm surprised that anybody wants me to minister to them. But if the Lord opens that door and blesses, it's my desire as it is Brother Gale's, Brother Kenny's, Brother Don's, to be used of the Lord to encourage the Lord's people. In Acts, it comes down and it says that I believe this is the beginning of the church at Philippi, or at least a portion of it right here. Paul said that he was impressed to go to Macedonia and to preach the gospel. And you know what? He didn't even know who he was going to. Elder Cecil Darty was an able minister down in central Georgia, and he passed away at about 80 years old. And before he passed away, I remember a message that he preached so ably. It was out of Galatians chapter 6, and it says, as we therefore have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto those that are of the household of faith. And he said, I looked back upon my life, and I realized that I'd missed some wonderful opportunities to encourage the Lord's people. He highlighted a couple of different examples. Here the Apostle Paul was looking for the opportunity. And it says that as they went to Philippi, it says, verse 12, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia in a colony. And we were in that city abiding certain days. And on the Sabbath day, we went out of the city by a riverside where prayer was wont to be made. And we sat down and we spake unto the women which resorted thither. And a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshipped God, heard us, whose heart the Lord opened. It is our desire to be used of God to tell folks what great things the Lord has done for them. We know that we do not have the ability to open the heart of an individual. The Lord is the one that opens the heart. And the Lord is the one that gets there and actually visits the individual first before the preacher gets there. You can go over and you can look at Paul's experience that he had. Before the preacher got there, the Lord had already done the work of grace within his heart. And here he says that there is a lady and that she is worshiping God, and she heard the Apostle Paul. And it says, whose heart the Lord opened, and she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. Isn't it great? Isn't it a blessing when you meet somebody that God has touched and opened their heart? We had an individual that his wife had died, and his neighbor is a member of our church. And she said, would you go over and visit my neighbor? He's about 75 years old. Said, would you go over and visit my neighbor? His wife has died, and he's been in a state of depression ever since his wife died. And that's enough to discourage or put someone in a state of depression, somebody that's been married for many, many years. And so I went to his house, and I'll never forget the scene as I went up to the door to knock on the door. Before I knocked on the door, I saw the individual sitting on the couch, and he was wringing his hands. His head was looking down, and he was in a state of sadness, in a state of depression, in a state of mourning, and he'd been that way ever since his wife had passed away, which had been almost a year. He welcomed me into his home. We went in. He did not have a church home. He had never been associated or affiliated with the church. And we began to go in and have a wonderful season of talking about the blessings and the things of the Lord. He responded. He responded positively because the Lord had already been there and opened his heart. He said, I'm going to be at church next Sunday. He came to church. He didn't know anything about the doctrines of grace. He didn't know anything about total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement. But he had a love of the Lord in his heart. And he came to church and he loved the fellowship of the Lord's people. He loved the singing of the hymns and it blessed his soul. And every week you could see his countenance go from a sad countenance to a happy countenance. After about 3 weeks, he said, from what I can understand in the scriptures, he says, I need to be baptized. Now, sometimes you preach to folks all your life, and they come up with a host of excuses on why not to be baptized. The best time to be baptized is when the Lord stirs your heart to be baptized. Baptism is not the putting away the filth of the flesh, but it is the answer of a good conscience before God. And the Lord is the one that stirs up your conscience. And the Lord stirred his conscience up, and he came forward seeking a home in the church. He's since been diagnosed with terminal cancer. He's at church every Sunday. He adopted a family that's stricken with poverty, and he goes around and goes to the grocery stores and takes coupons and fills his car up with provisions, and every Sunday he brings them to this family. He'll pick up folks and bring them to church. And he says, according to what the doctors say, I'm not even supposed to be here. I've got advanced cancer. But he says, I give him all the credit and glory. And he's changed from a countenance that was sad and despondent and full of despair to rejoicing in the Lord. Doctors don't always know. Sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. We were visiting the nursing home, and this elderly lady told us, she said, the doctor gave me 6 months to live. But she said, that doctor that told me that's been dead 25 years. So, they don't always know. It says that when Paul preached the things of the Lord had opened her heart and she attended unto the things that were spoken of Paul. Isn't that exciting when we just attend to the things that are spoken to us? We don't challenge it. We don't debate it. We don't say, well, it doesn't apply to me. We just take it as it is and we apply it in our life. And isn't that exciting to see? And you know what? There was such an impression made upon this sister, Lydia, that it says that then she was baptized, and not only that, but she and her household. It made such an impression upon this sister. It had such a life-changing experience in the life of her that she began to call her friends together. She began to call her family together. It made such a difference in her life that she wanted it to make a difference in theirs. She called her family together. She called her friends together. And it says that she was baptized, and she and her household. And then she said unto Paul, she said, if you've judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there. And she constrained us. Last week, I visited the church at Columbia, Maryland, and visited with a gentleman, and he said, it's been 32 years since I've been to church here. He's been there the last three Sundays. But he said, I came with my parents to church, and I can show you exactly where we used to sit. And he said, church didn't mean a thing to me back then. But he said, I've had a hard life. And he said, I'm searching for something. And he said, there's something that I don't have that I need. And he's been coming the last 3 weeks. And last week, we took an opportunity to go through the articles of faith and allow him an opportunity to ask any questions about any of the articles that he has. Not that that's a requirement for baptism, but it's a blessing for folks to know what they're joining. It's a blessing for them to not be surprised when they find out that we wash feet. Absolutely we do. And that it's taught in John chapter 13. Here he comes down, and there's one more experience, and we'll wrap it up with this last one. The Apostle Paul he had delivered this woman that was taken of the spirit of divination, and as a result, he was placed in prison, Paul and Silas. Last time that Brother George, Sister Jamie, were in our area, and Brother George preached, I can remember Brother George saying that when the Apostle Paul went on a preaching trip, the first place he normally went was by the jail because he wanted to check it out. He knew he was probably going to end up there. Well, here the Apostle Paul ended up in jail. But you know, it wasn't such a bad thing. It says that the Apostle Paul was in jail. The multitude rose up against them, and the magistrates rent their clothes. They did beat them. They were beaten with many stripes. Last spring, we had the privilege of having a service in Boston, Massachusetts. To our knowledge, we don't know if there's ever been an old school or primitive Baptist church in that area, but there's a few families in that area that were interested in the Lord, some that were raised primitive Baptist. And we met in a Quaker meeting house, and Brother Mike Rogers was there and preached a wonderful, able message. But we began to read the history of some of the Baptists in the area, and we realized that Massachusetts was not friendly to the Baptist when they first started out. And in fact, it was told of a story that in the mid-1600s that there were three Baptist ministers that went to visit one of the church members in Laws, Massachusetts, about 15 miles northeast of Boston. And it says that the constables, because they were not of the Church of England, the constables were somehow they were notified and they came. And they arrested all three of these Baptist ministers. And it says that two of the ministers paid the fine that was incurred upon them, and one of the ministers did not, Obadiah Holmes. And it says that they beat him with many stripes. And Elder Obadiah Holmes said, "It feels like that you are whipping me with rose petals for the sake of my Lord." I wonder if we'd be that faithful to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. To know that there's a good possibility that when we leave these doors, we may be cast into prison, and very likely we may be beaten with stripes. Happened right here in the United States of America. It did. It said the wounds were so bad upon Obadiah Holmes that for 2 weeks he had to sleep on his knees and elbows. Wow. Paul was beaten in prison. And the jailer was charged to keep them safely there, who, having received such a charge, he thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in stocks. And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them. I wonder if that's what we'd be doing if we were cast into prison. It says Paul was singing praises, Paul and Silas singing praises unto God. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, so that the foundations of the prison were shaken, and immediately all the doors were opened and everyone's bands loosed. And the keeper of the prison, awaking out of his sleep and seeing the prison doors open, he drew his sword, and he would have killed himself, supposing the prisoners have fled. But Paul cried with a loud voice and says, "Do thyself no harm, for we are all here." Then he sprang, and he called for a light, and he sprang in and came trembling and fell down before Paul and Silas, and said to Paul and Silas, brought them out and said, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And they said, "Believe on the Lord Jesus Christ, and thou shalt be saved, and thy house." Now, how in the world could he believe on the Lord Jesus Christ? Only if the Lord's touched him and visited him and given him a hope in Christ. And they spake unto him the word of the Lord, and to all that were in his house, and he took them the same hour that night and washed their stripes and was baptized, he and all his. And when they had brought them into his house, he set meat before them and rejoiced, believing in God with all his house. It talks about that in Acts chapter 2, that when the Lord added unto the church and when the Lord was blessing the church, that in every case they went away rejoicing. Isn't it amazing how that when we follow what God's word has to say, that God oftentimes blesses with the end result of going our way rejoicing, worshiping the Lord in one accord. Our communion service is very much like yours. In fact, Brother Afton and Brother George taught us the example of the communion service. And if you just consider the communion service, how that when we enter into the communion service and we do it in remembrance of the Lord and we partake of the bread and we partake of the wine, how that it's such a serious, solemn assembly, and it ought to be. How that we place much seriousness upon the service. But isn't it amazing how that God changes that seriousness? Not that we take it lightly, but how that when we take the next part that he instructs us to do over in John chapter 13. And we begin to wash the disciples' feet and wash each other's feet. How that God begins to bless in that. I remember Brother Afton saying, he said, "I've remembered this and I think of it every single time that we take communion." He said, if you've got any oughts at all against a brother or sister, he said, now's a good time to address it before the Lord. He said, just wash it off in the pan, and then we'll just go over and we'll pour that water out, and that'll be the end of it. You say, that sounds simple. Well, it is. Just pour it out. And we're taught by Jesus Christ by setting that example for us. He doesn't say, happy are you if you know these things. Happy are you if you believe these things. He says, happy are you if you do these things. There's a blessing in the doing. There is. And God takes a service that begins to be serious and solemn, and it's very serious and solemn. And he takes that service, and by the time you conclude, it's a time of rejoicing before the Lord. I don't think I've ever attended a communion feet washing service that I didn't leave rejoicing in the Lord. I wouldn't trade anything in the world for the Lord's church and for the blessing that it's been to me in my life. And I pray that it'll be a blessing to you as well. May God bless you.